Good morning, everyone. We're going to have to get started here. We've got a lot to cover on our agenda today. I want to start by thanking you all for showing up, taking time out of your Saturday to come down and talk about some of these issues that we're looking at in under the Community 2050 program. We've got a few folks back there gathering a cup of coffee and a roll. Make sure I get my technology going here. The red light is on. And I might have to adjust the... Make sure our clicker works here, all of our technology. Good. Welcome to Community 2050. I want to start by saying that we don't pretend that we're able to see all the way out to the year 2050, but we're using this as a framework for thinking. We're looking to what our community is going to be like in terms of what our children and our grandchildren are going to find. You know, you look at the picture up on the screen, that's about 70 years ago, and it notes that it's the San Fernando Valley. That isn't what you'd see out there today. If you look at that far ridge line there and you look in the next photo, well, I do want to note that back then they had an attitude about resources that said, you know, water from the Colorado River, we need it, let's go get it. And we're going to talk about water today. We haven't talked about water as a resource, particular in our past workshops. We've been adjusting each of these workshops as we go from region to region. We understand there's an interest in talking about water today, so we added that in. John Hand is going to be here to help us on that. But if you look at that ridgeline in the back of the picture and you look at what's there now, you can see the degree of change that can occur in a relatively short period of time. And our conversations, and that's what we're looking to do today, is to start the conversation about where do we want to be in that kind of a long-term or medium-term future, as it might be. We started a year ago with a number of workshops around the county. In fact, some of the maps at the very back of the room are from the Coastside workshops where we asked people to participate. We did a lot of work in interactive polling. We're going to do some of that today. We came through that process and ranked the summary concepts that we got through that process. And we looked at what the next steps would be when we move forward from that process. So this is a sample from when we had our meetings in the city of Grover Beach, and the city of Grover Beach looked at their future development using the tool and are now using that to leverage the beginning of their general plan update process in a more detailed analysis of how these things can be actualized. We also had meetings in what we call the Coastside and the inland areas of the county, where we asked people to put little stickers on the maps to help us see where they wanted to see future growth in the long term. We put on the maps all of the general plans in all of the cities and counties, and we calculated the kind of growth that was going to be needed above and beyond that, and that's what we asked people to do through that process. We summarized those. We work with folks to look at what were the concepts behind what they were talking about. And again, well, we have another map in the back room similar to this one. This shows the allocation of land uses that people put across the face of the county in terms of everything from the yellow being single-family development to the reds, which are commercial development. And you'll note that people concentrated those developments around existing developed areas of the county. This map shows the intensity. In other words, if the darker red, the more people felt that development should be placed in that area. And this even further concentrates it more around the existing developed areas of the county. And what we want to talk about are how are some of the ways that we're going to get to be able to do these kind of things to create the kind of environment that we say we want against the odds of what it takes to get there. And I think we all know that it's a constant struggle, if you will, when it comes to projects within developed areas because of the resistance of neighbors and the community, and looking at what might this do to change our community. And we want to look at how those changes can be done in a positive fashion to accommodate the needed growth that we're looking forward to. This is a close-up of the South County area. You can see the intensity that people looked at in the existing Grover Arroyo area there, up around San Luis Obispo, even out in Los Osos Baywood, where they're struggling with how they're going to handle their resource constraints. So the concepts that we came out of this process with really address the availability of natural resources, developing adjacent to existing communities, encouraging infill and compact development, looking at how we're going to get more housing closer to jobs, and how we're going to increase the supply of affordable homes. In addition, again, people looking at jobs and housing. That was a theme that we've heard consistently throughout this process. How do we look at intensifying downtown and commercial areas? How do we protect our open space and ag land and create buffers to separate our communities and protect the scenic views that we all appreciate? After we went through that process, we looked at what were the next steps? Where do we go from here, and how do we get there? What we're looking at today are the first 3 points on the bullet there in this initiating this conversation. How do we come together for some kind of a reason-based planning effort to look beyond the borders of our individual communities? We've got to come together with our decision makers and understand what their issues and problems are and help them understand how we can use tools to accomplish the things that people told us they want to see. And we have to keep the community engaged. I'll be talking about the grant program that we're looking at in a minute to help us do that. The next phase, the phase that we're moving towards under the grant program, are the bottom three. How do we agree on goals and the principles that we want to move forward with? How do we integrate those lessons into our ongoing decision-making process? And how do we measure development against those principles? Those are going to be some of the issues we're hoping to talk about next spring and summer. This chart shows where we've been and where we are. As I mentioned, the series of workshops that we held last year in Grover and in different areas around the county, and in Arroyo Grande as well, is under the getting started portion that's been completed. Right now, we're in what we're talking about as, say, how do we get focused on these issues? How do we look at how we want to move forward from here? The next component, we have a grant application into the state, and we've broken that down into 3 steps. And next spring, we want to come back together and then take what we've learned and define the direction and talk about some of the solutions. What does form-based codes mean, and how might those be applied? Things like that when it comes to resources. What kind of resources do we have available to us? You know, you've seen a number of maps around the room. You have maps on the tables in front of you, little map atlases that were put together through Cal Poly's Landscape Architecture GIS lab working with us that represent some of the information we've already collected that we're going to be building upon as we move forward to talk about these choices. And then how do we take that into developing concepts and that can be utilized in the general plans, utilized in terms of modifying standards, and look at what our resources are and begin to shape this to where we ultimately can get to where we can talk about some consensus amongst and between areas of the county to look at how we might move forward. We've broken this process down into the 4 sub-areas of the county, working in the North County, working in the South County, as we are today, the Central County, we met there about a month ago, and then the North Coast, we're going to meet up there in a couple of weeks. But each one of these areas has a unique and distinct characteristics to their housing element, the elements of their housing in their areas, the commercial nature, the economy, and even the population. When we were in the North County last week, I wore a cowboy hat, wore some cowboy duds so that I could represent North County. Today I decided I'd look more casual, like I'm down here on vacation, enjoying the beautiful beach area. It's a driving part of our economy down here. In fact, the mainstay of the economy in the South County being that tourist economy. So again, a little more detail on this process. We've been through the first portion. We've talked to elected officials about what some of the key issues are. We put together some fact sheets, which are in the packets you have with you today. And we're in this first set of meetings here, down there at the South County, as it's highlighted in red. When we move forward through this process, we're going to be looking at some what we're calling blueprint funding from the state. The state is really looking to see better decision-making coming from regions of the state. The state struggles with how do they make decisions and allocate funds. they've been looking to regions to say, what are your objectives? And in the past, we've been able to sort of say, well, this city wants that, that city wants that, the county wants this, and we've been able to move along. But the state's saying they need a better handle on what are the regional needs and priorities, and that's one of the things we deal with at the Council of Governments in terms of transportation all the time. So where are we headed? Well, we're looking towards coming forward with some kind of comprehensive vision. Now, there have been some people expressing concern that, gee, is this going to become a plan? And is this plan going to force me to do things that we don't want to do in our communities? That's not where we're wanting to take this. What we're looking to do is to try to create a vision for the community and help each of the jurisdictions look at how they might adjust and shape their plans so that our common vision comes together in terms of the final result. Now, today, we're going to hear a number of folks on a number of issues. Chuck Anders is going to be taking up the microphone in a minute, and he's going to help us get ready to do some of the clicker technology. You've got the clickers on your table. Many of you here have been involved with this before. I'll let Chuck explain it. Jim Lopes from the County Planning Department is going to talk about growth trends and the overall direction in the bigger picture from how some of these things come together. Economic vitality, Mike Manchek, the new CEO president of the EBC, is going to talk on those issues, followed by Dana Lilly. On housing. Dana does a lot of work on housing, and I want to note we have some handouts over there. The county's looking at an infrastructure financing plan, and that's one of the things that we're hoping to see come out of this kind of a process is a structure and an understanding of our long-term infrastructure needs and the costs. Michael Isine from the Ag Commissioner's Office is going to be here to talk about agriculture. I don't think Michael's here yet, followed by Ron DeCarli talking about transportation. John Hand is going to talk about water and natural resources, primarily just the water component of it. And then Brian Stark is going to be talking about open space and the Land Conservancy's role in terms of how we can protect and manage our open space areas. Obviously, you know about November 5th because you're here. And then on November 19th, we're going to be looking at the North Coast area of the county in a similar session. So in order to try to keep us on track, I'm going to turn this over to Chuck right now. And let Chuck get started on orienting you to the clickers.
Good morning. I can't wait to see what Steve wears on the North Coast. Are you going to dress up like a fisherman or what?
I was thinking about a wetsuit, but then I just look like a, you know, like a sea lion or something. So.
I think you'd look pretty good in shorts, you know. Good morning. My name is Chuck Anders, and I actually live right here in Arroyo Grande, so it's great to be have the opportunity to assist in this process right here where it really means something to me. We are going to have the opportunity to see and listen to a number of really good speakers that have great information about growth and the implications of growth in the county and this specific region. We also want to hear from you. And so one of the ways that we're going to accomplish that is to use these, they're technically FM radio interactive keypads, we just call them clickers, and this provides the opportunity to ask you some questions and immediately get the results back. You press a button to respond to your question, and then we can actually see the results. And our focus here is to talk about those results and have you discuss why you think the results here in South County are the way they are. So if everybody would grab a clicker, we'll get started. And one of the great things about this technology is we can collect some demographic information at the beginning so everybody can get a sense for who's here in the audience and kind of what their perspective is. And then we can also slice and dice the data by those demographics to see if the ladies feel strongly more about something as the guys or if the seniors feel more strongly than the young people and so on and so forth. So let's go ahead and collect that demographic data. And the way this is done is simply to respond to the question, where do you live? This should be an easy one. And you press the number that corresponds to the correct answer. In this case, most of you might press 4, but some other, there may be some folks here from other areas. And the way this technology works best is just press the number, don't hold it down. Just press it, and you'll see the number you press come up in the little red box, and when that number goes out, it means that the system has collected your information. This is also where we're going to register the keypads. So we want to make sure everybody's keypad gets registered. So press that number one more time. Same number. and do it one more time just to be sure. Okay, looks like we have 33 participants here. Next question is, do you live in an incorporated city, a town, or a rural area? Now you see the numbers down in the little box on the bottom, and that's the numbers that the system is waiting to hear from. So if you see your number down in that box, you want to make sure that you press your answer. So the system's waiting to hear from number 76, keypad number 76, and number 100. Press the clear button. And press the answer again. What is just stuck? Okay, now go ahead and press your number. You missed the first question? Oh, grab a clicker. Grab a different one. You know, some people can't wear watches. Maybe you can't run clickers. You have this magnetism. Did you get a different one? Here, do this one. Okay, this isn't going the way it's supposed to go. Let's do this real quick, just to make sure everything gets squared away. Since we just started this, let's start over and make sure everyone... Okay, go ahead and answer the question again. Where do you live? Yes. Work this time? Okay, good. Go ahead and press your answer one more time. There we go. Next question. Do you live in an incorporated city, town, or rural area? Next question. Where do you work? What happens is it takes about 2 seconds for the system to collect your answer. So it may stay on for a couple of seconds. How long have you lived in San Luis Obispo County? What is your household income? Now, this is a confidential, so nobody's keeping track of who has what clickers, and we don't look at individual clicker results. So everyone can be honest here. Do you own your own residence? What is your gender? And speaking of being honest, you can answer this question honestly. No. Ethnic background. What group best describes your participation in this meeting? And did you participate in a previous 2050 workshop, either the summit meeting or the regional workshops that were held? Okay, take a look at who's here. So most people are here from South County, but there are a few people here from other areas of the county. So do you live in an incorporated city or town? A little more than half live in an incorporated city, but almost 36% unincorporated communities. Where do you work? Almost 40% work in San Luis Obispo. Almost 30% are retired. And about a quarter of you work here in South County. How long have you lived in San Luis Obispo County? Almost 36%, 20 years or more. And 40%, 5 to 10 years. So this is a little different than what we've seen in a couple of the other areas. This area is seeing more newer people. Household income. Got a pretty good distribution of household income here. 88% of you own your own residence. And the guys outnumber the girls about 2 to 1. Age-wise, majority between 40 and 65. Ethnic background, majority Anglo-white. Stakeholder groups represented. We have 5 elected officials, 6 folks from advisory committees, and 8 people representing other government, 2 from the development financial, 3 other business, 1 from nonprofit, and 8 people here representing themselves as citizens. And did you participate in the previous workshop? Almost 65% of you said yes. I think that's about the highest percentage we've had in all the meetings also. So that's a sense of who's here and who's participating here today. Now we have another opportunity that I think is really a unique opportunity. You have these meetings and you wonder, do the people who come to these meetings really, do they have a different perspective than the general population, or do they see things consistent with the general population? You would argue that the people who come to these meetings may be more knowledgeable, more involved, so they may have a different perspective. Well, the county just participated and asked a number of growth questions in a recent countywide telephone survey. And so what we have the opportunity to do is ask you some of those questions, and we will analyze the data, and at the end of this meeting, we'll show you the results of the county survey, the countywide, the results of South County telephone survey, and your results here today, and we can actually see the alignment between those responses. So it's a way almost to calibrate the participation in these meetings and whether they actually represent the overall perspective of the population. So let's go ahead and ask some of those questions. One of the things that the county survey asked is the relative importance of a number of community issues, and those were traffic congestion, population growth, lack of well-paying jobs, not enough housing price for the average worker, too much development in rural areas, and declining quality of life. So grab your clickers. Please use the same number of clicker that you used before. And the question is, how serious is this issue in the areas that you are most familiar? Traffic congestion on a scale from 1 to 9. And you can use any number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 being extremely serious, 1 not a problem. Now, in order to keep things moving, you'll notice this red bar over here. You have to get your answer in before that red bar disappears or the system automatically moves on. So the next one is population growth. How serious is this issue? Beat the bar. Great. Lack of well-paying jobs. number 100. Not enough housing, price for the average worker. Too much development in rural areas. And declining quality of life. Okay, there were some other polling questions that they asked, and one was, which of the following, and I will read this before I, which of the following best reflects your opinion about how city governments and county should cooperate on land use and growth issues? Do you think they should cooperate more closely than in the past, the same degree as in the past, work independently, or simply you don't know or don't have a preference? Next question. Do you think that local government should match plans for new housing with plans for job growth in a specific area, or should they plan for new housing even if not many jobs are planned in that area? How small or large an area should planners be thinking about when making plans for housing and job growth? Do you think that local government should plan to match growth in jobs and affordable housing? And should they match those across a wider geographic area, such as the North County, South County, Central County regions, across the whole county, or you don't know? Number 90. Do you think it's better to steer growth toward undeveloped rural areas, already developed communities, both, neither, or don't know, no preference? Here's a water question. We have a limited water supply in San Luis Obispo County and a growing need for affordable housing. Which of the following options would you be more willing to accept in addressing these two shortages? Would you be willing to choose conserve water, pay more, limit growth to match existing water supply, or don't know, no preference? Should local government allow new cities to develop next to existing ones, or plan to retain open land between cities, or press three if you don't know or don't have a preference? People say there are trade-offs in choosing a local community to live in. Other things being equal, which of the following would you prefer? A single-family detached home on a large parcel of land which is not near any parks or shopping, schools, or work? Or would you prefer a single-family detached home on an average or small lot near parks, shopping, schools, and work? Some interesting questions. Number 86. Next question. This is another trade-off question. People say there are trade-offs in choosing a local community to live in. Other things being equal, which would you prefer? This is a neighborhood that is a mix of single-family homes, apartments, and condo projects near parks, shopping, schools, and work, or a neighborhood of single-family homes only, which is not near parks, shopping, schools, or work. Okay, now one last thing on the survey, and we'll move on to the rest of our program. And I would like you to pull out of your packet this salmon-colored sheet and grab a pencil or a pen. And on the very top of this salmon-colored sheet, it says countywide survey. There are five items listed, and they are developing more transportation choices, less dependence on cars, creating more walkable communities with housing mixed with parks, shopping, and schools, increasing affordable housing supply, protecting the environment, and developing communities with housing near jobs. And the question is, county and city planners are asked to focus on many different issues. How would you rank the following issues? So I would ask you to identify your highest priority and place a 7 on the line in front of it. So the highest priority is ranked a 7. Now pick the lowest priority of those 7 Oh, we messed up here. It says, put a 5. I apologize. We had a miscommunication when we put this together. There's not 7 items, there's 5. So put a 5 on your highest priority. And put a 1 on your lowest priority. Then rank your second highest priority a 4. Your next highest priority a 3. And 2 and 1. Okay, so you should have each one of them ranked 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, right? Now we're going to go through them individually and simply press the number that you rank this particular issue, developing more transportation choices. If you ranked it a 5, you'd press a 5. If you ranked it a 2, you'd press a 2. How did you rank creating more walkable communities with housing mixed with parks, shopping, and schools? How about increasing affordable housing supply? Protecting the environment. Developing communities with housing near jobs. Okay, great. Now what we're going to do is we're going to take that information, we're going to put some charts together, so we'll have some charts that will compare your answers here today with the countywide responses, which, have they been published, Jim? So these data have not been published yet, so you're going to be the first, one of the first to actually see the results of the countywide data. And then also South County. Yes, David. Next process, we'll make sure they get registered, absolutely. Okay, so our next speaker is going to talk about growth trends and review the growth trends in the county and South County. And we're fortunate to have here Jim Lopes. Jim is going to enlighten us about what's happening countywide.
Thank you. Nice to be here this morning. The bus ride down here was terrific. Just kidding. The talk I'm going to give you is just an overview of some trends that have occurred throughout the state and this area, looking at growth in the state and then looking at the perspective that we have here. Of course, there's been a massive population increase in California, and that's continuing. Projected population growth in California will be tremendous. We have a crisis pretty much on our hands here and in the state, providing affordable and workforce housing. There is a challenge to provide sustainable economic development in certain regions of the state, which are either encumbered by residential growth but not job growth, or in other areas where there's job growth but not residential growth. All these factors are affecting community livability, and all the indicators point to that we need to reduce sprawl. Looking at the state then, statewide, there's explosive and unprecedented growth. 12 million more people in the next 16 years. An unprecedented amount of housing is needed to accommodate that projected growth. Most of that growth is projected to occur in the Bay Area, Central Valley, Southern California, and the Central Coast, of course, is in the middle of all those areas. And we can expect pressure here from retirees and other folks leaving those areas, moving here as they sell their homes to people from other areas of the nation and the world moving to California. Looking at some of those areas around the state in Fresno, Riverside and Merced, you can see pretty high growth rates there. The growth rates in Fresno, Riverside, 18%, 39%, Merced, 31%, just in these 10 years between 2000 and 2010, while San Luis Obispo's growth is about 11.72% in that time frame, much less. But then we have some constraints in terms of infrastructure and also natural resources that are going to impact us perhaps as much or more as some of these other areas that are growing faster. The statewide housing crisis is basically because there's a limited supply, high demand, with 220,000 new dwellings needed in the state each year through 2020. The state is only getting 140,000 dwellings on average between 1990 and 2000, and that difference is continuing. There isn't a catch-up that's occurring where housing is catching up with that increase in demand. And in our county, we have had a high housing demand, but mostly for above median-priced homes. Only 10% of the households in the county can afford to buy a median-priced home, which is currently at $600,000. We can expect that will continue, but to try to provide housing for the 90% of households or people in the county who need housing and can't afford that median price, we need to look at other kinds of housing products than the detached large lot home. How well are we doing in providing that type of product? This shows that just in 2003, only 3 years ago, there were 1,194 total housing units provided, only 60 multifamily units. You can see that hasn't changed much in the last year, just a small increase in the number of multifamily units that have been provided. In 2002, there was an excellent article in the Tribune about the housing crisis that was evolving. And that series that was created, I think, gave everybody a warning shot that it was time to deal with that crisis. This slide shows that not much has changed since 2002. In the city of San Luis Obispo, just looking at our largest city, the housing products have increased in the affordable category, but the overall increase is rather small. Looking at our economy, the trends in our economy is that we are having a challenge providing housing and other things needed for the workforce needed for employers. Our economy depends on locally available trained workforce and affordable housing, and we have people leaving the area to find affordable housing elsewhere. Just Wednesday, this week, there was an article in the Tribune about Bob Trailers moving to, I think, Boise, Idaho, because of the lack of affordable housing as well as other factors. So we do have this problem that continues. Looking at the trends in school enrollment, with the affordability crisis, we find that people are really not able to, if they can't afford to live here, especially young families, then they live elsewhere. And what happens then is elementary school enrollment has declined or is declining throughout the county, with some exceptions, such as the schools in Nipomo. And if you look at that heavy bar at the top, you can see in most cases it's a pretty steep decline in enrollment for elementary schools. It may be that the high school enrollments are continuing to increase because the people who moved here 10 years ago or so and have high school-aged children bought into the area before the drastic increase in house prices that occurred in the last few years. Looking at transportation trends, population growth since 1970 has increased 70% in California, but the number of vehicle miles traveled total around the state has increased 162%, over twice the rate of population growth. So people are driving more and driving longer distances to get to their destinations. And looking around the state then, the number of miles traveled has increased 25% just in the last 10 years. There's been over 200% increase in the time spent in traffic in the state and since 1982, and there's been money lost in time and fuel of $78 billion just in 1 year in California. Those statewide trends may look like they're outside our door, but in fact they're headed our way, and I think what we have to do is ask, are we going to be responsive to what's going on in the state, or are we going to choose options that continue to create problems? So what can we do? As Steve mentioned earlier, we're looking at developing regional strategies, alliances, and intergovernmental coordination. We would like to obviously have more affordable workforce housing, and we're looking at implementing smart growth principles. Smart growth, first of all, has sustainability in mind. Sustainability looks at meeting the needs of the current generation without compromising future generations' ability to meet their own needs. In other words, not depleting our resources or overloading our systems and leaving future generations to deal with those. Smart growth also addresses economics, the environment, and social equity, and tries to balance all those in each land use decision made. From Sonny Wright McPeak, the Secretary of Business, Transportation, and Housing for the Schwarzenegger administration, she has said that the heart of dumb growth is housing farther and farther from job centers, longer commutes, greater pollution and impacts on habitat, and chewing up farmland. Smart growth can help the health of people because development may be located closer to destinations so that people find it easy to walk and bike to where they're going instead of driving. It also respects the environment and tries to handle drainage and other kinds and air quality and water supply and water quality issues in a real detailed manner. Smart growth also provides more open space, parks near where people live. And just by the land use pattern in smart growth, destinations are closer to where people live, so sprawl is changed to more compact development, and that then lessens traffic congestion. Smart growth also allows farmers and communities to save agricultural lands around their perimeters or in prime ag land areas within their communities. On June 7th of this year, the Board of Supervisors endorsed smart growth principles unanimously, and our staff is working toward implementation strategies to bring smart growth principles such as these into county policy. So we're glad to be working with the Council of Governments to begin that path of changing our general plan and zoning standards to implement smart growth strategies. And these are five of them. I think most critical is to strengthen regional cooperation between cities and county as to where and how growth will occur in the county. And number three, direct development towards existing communities. I think Steve mentioned that. We also want to, and number five, provide a variety of transportation and land use choices for people so that if people want to buy a detached large lot house, that will still be available, but there will also be plenty of other options for different kinds of housing, for instance. Another part of that set of principles has to do with creating a range of housing opportunities and choices and encouraging mixed land uses so that residences and businesses and shopping are close together. Looking at this top picture on the slide, the typical urban corridor with single-use development along it with easy auto access to parking lots along the street is a familiar sight to most of us, and we may have grown up with that, but in fact that does create that separation and distance between housing and development or workplaces and shopping. The bottom picture shows how an urban corridor can provide nice housing above businesses that then enlivens the street during the evening, provides walkable community life, and puts parking out of sight, out of mind, as kind of a utilitarian aspect of living. Actually, there is a light rail line coming toward us on the left side next to that bus. Yeah. The typical commercial strip may have a building like this that has a shop that closes at 5 when mom or pop go home after work, and then that is a kind of a blank space on the street during the evening, quiet. It's not part of the community life at that point. So what smart growth tries to do is bring in mixed use, tries to get residential uses upstairs, which then can help with business life being more community oriented and open later in the evening. So how do we make smart growth happen? I think these ideas speak for themselves. We are looking at well-designed developments. We'd like to work with communities on visioning how smart growth might happen. We're looking at neighborhood planning, and we want to build coalitions. Basically, all of us need to decide whether we're going to participate in this and become advocates or just kind of observers of this process. And it's great to see you all here today. We are, of course, not alone, and yet we're the ones that, because we're here today, need to step forward and see if we can improve on the current situation. Thank you for your time. We're glad to answer any questions you have. Bill?
Is this?
Oh, yes.
You know, I've been an elected official now for 7 years. My term doesn't expire until 2008. And are we in this process looking to try to reinvent some wheel? You know, I was over in Europe. Those people have been around for thousands of years and have had exactly the same problems that we've had. I believe that there are other communities throughout the United States, and I know some of them that are in Maryland and these other things, that provide very specific models. And are we going there, or are we just mentally trying to come up with something on our own that we hope that's going to fix us? And if so, I think that's dead wrong, because there are examples, and why should we take the taxpayers' money and our time to try to reinvent something if there's something out there that's good? If there's not, that's a different scenario. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I think what you're saying, Bill, is that you're probably ready to sign on the dotted line for some changes to how things are going. That's great. That's encouraging. What we're hoping to do is bring people along, and hopefully you folks will help do that, to a point where the general community will strongly support some different types of development that you don't see often in California. You have to go to the center of our larger cities and our metropolitan areas to find the kind of compact development that is needed in California. Basically, land cost is the main problem with affordable housing in California. And so to get more units per acre, you need to have, you need to have higher density. So as you said, Bill, there are examples around the world. And I don't think we want to reinvent things or start from ground zero. We want to use the best of those other efforts that have been going on around the country. Utah's has had a project called Envision Utah. There has been a project in the Bay Area sponsored by the Bay Area governments. And Sacramento region, the COG for Sacramento area, has just been in a process similar to ours. And so we want to kind of cherry pick and show people how we can go forward. Hope that answers your question. Mike?
Jim, just two questions real quickly. One, you said that only 10% of the people in the county can afford to purchase a home.
The median priced house.
But my gut feeling is that more than that actually own homes. So what is the actual percentage of ownership in the county versus how many could buy if we all started out fresh today without owning a home? And then the second thing, you said the smart growth helps produce parks, and I would like you to tell us about any parks that you know of that have been created in the South County in the last 10 years.
Good. I think home ownership in the county is over 70%, if not 80%, close to the ratio here today. But let me ask of you, if you've owned your home for more than 5 years and you were to sell it today, would you be able to afford the price of a home that is just like yours? That's kind of a question you have to look at in terms of the movement of people when they sell and they buy and so on. Can they move up? And then, Mike, you had another point on the parks in communities and the lack of parks in our communities. That is a crisis problem, I think, in that there are very few neighborhood parks in the county. And I think what we're looking at in this county is we need to get smarter. We need to do that soon.
I'm going to have one more question, and then we got to kind of keep things moving here.
I see all these great projects with units above commercial and innovative projects being something we're interested in. But in Napomo right now, you only allow 24 units a year for the entire year, 24 units for mixed-use projects or these type of units we're talking about. And if somebody goes in right now to the planning department and says, you know, this is a great idea, I'm going to buy some property, I'm getting the best architect in the world, they tell them, good, we'll have allocations ready for you in 2010.
The rate of growth in our county depends highly on the availability of water supply and other resources. So in some areas of the county, like Napomo, there is a kind of a restriction on the rate of growth. There's also not much attention paid to how that growth rate is allocated to different kinds of land uses. What we and the county do is exempt affordable housing units from the growth rate limits, and that can create some additional affordable units if people are interested. Thank you. Is that
we're going to move on, I think, to the next speaker. We've got to keep things kind of flowing. We could keep talking, and we will keep talking as we go. Sorry to anybody that didn't get to ask their question, but Chuck, are you going to introduce the next speaker?
Our next speaker is Mike Manchek. Mike is the new executive director of the Economic Vitality Corporation, and we're very fortunate to have him talk to us about economic vitality in this county. So, Mike, it's all yours.
Great. Thank you very much, Chuck. Thank you, everyone. Good morning. Glad to be here and to be part of this discussion about the economy. It's an integral part of this planning process. And first, let me talk just a bit about the EVC. The EVC provides resources for economic development and business development throughout the entire county. We're sponsored by the county, the cities, seven cities in the county, as well as companies and individuals. We provide resources that include business creation, retention, expansion, and attraction. So we provide resources for those individuals that are seeking to start a business, for those that are trying to keep their business in the county, whether it be relocation services or to find a new location for the company, or financing, expansion of companies. So for those individuals or companies that are seeking to, that need more resources to expand their operations, and of course attraction. Attraction in this environment is very difficult due to the cost of housing and the lack of professional jobs. And I'll talk more about that in a bit. On-site location services, this is something that we do at no cost to companies that are trying to find a location. Business loans, we have two loan programs for which have been very helpful. We have many success stories in helping to either save companies or get companies started. And business consulting services, we have a wide range of resources that are available at no cost to individuals and to companies. And we have one other resource which has been very helpful, and that is the Trailing Spouse Job Network. And really what we do there is we help individuals find a job so that that company can recruit their spouse. Let's talk a bit about the county demographics. And I'll be brief with my data here to allow more time for questions afterwards. County population, about 250,000 people. The unemployment rate of 3.8%, this is number four in the state of California. So it's extremely low. As it says up there, 1 year ago it was 4.1%. This compares to state and national averages of unemployment of 4.8%. 3.8%, however, there's a lot more of that than meets the eye. There is a tremendous amount of underemployment in this area, and that is one of the hurdles to economic development in this area. Top industries, as we know, we have ag, tourism, retail, utilities, and education and government. And there are those that believe that with such strong sectors or industries in this economy, that that's a good thing. And it is in some ways. However, when you have much of your economy that focuses on ag and tourism and the government sector, if you have a downturn in any one of those industries, there could be a very big problem. And ultimately, our economy throughout the county is not diverse due to this. Jobs. Out of 103,000 jobs, increasingly the service sector is growing in the number of jobs. And this is relative to goods-producing jobs. This is also an indicator that we do not have a diverse economy. Below this is the sector, industry sectors for which there are more than 10,000 jobs. And if you'll notice there, government has 20,000 jobs, hospitality industry or tourism, 15,000, retail, 13,000, education and health, 10,000. Again, if, you know, because of this undiverse nature of the economy and a lack of high-paying professional jobs, particularly in either the goods-producing or service sector economies, if there is a downturn, let's say another 9/11, or a natural disaster, let's say, in the ag industry, where there's a, you know, where the wine industry could be impacted, that could be very bad for the economy. There have been discussions in other areas of the state about economic vitality, and there have been great studies that have been done in different areas of the state. And on the left side is a long list of those areas, or counties and regions. However, the Central Coast is missing from that, and I think that's what this group and future planning will help to provide more input, more studies on our regional economy here. There are various concerns about the economic vitality of this area. Some of these, in no particular order, are as follows. One, it does lack economic diversification. It is very difficult to attract companies into this area, primarily for two reasons. The cost of housing, which we all know is now $600,000, the median price throughout the county, but also the lack of other professional jobs. This has impacted Cal Poly, companies in the area that are very successful or trying to be successful. We have largely a service sector economy, and it's increasingly so. The ag industry and the tourism industry are not particularly famous for their high-paying jobs. And this is something that, again, I think we need to look at very carefully and see if we can increase the numbers of high-paying jobs in the county. Again, light on high-paying jobs. There are individuals that are seeking employment for which they say, if this job doesn't work out, then what do I do? Or what is my spouse going to do? That's a major problem now in talking to companies throughout the county. And in some cases, that exceeds the concern of the cost of housing. Because if you can get two individuals that have a high-paying job, in many cases they can afford to purchase a home in the area. There's this concern that there is this growing numbers of working poor, basically people that are not getting ahead because of the cost of housing. And this, in many ways, is taxing the fabric of our society. When you have more working poor, as it's called, you know, you stress the family unit, and everyone is impacted from that. The hurdles to doing business development, again, it goes back to the cost of housing, the lack of high-paying jobs. The EDC is trying to help in this by providing more resources to companies and more connections so that we can help grow our companies within the county. Difficult to attract or recruit employees and attract companies. Again, it goes back to these hurdles that we really need to work on, that the Community 2050 project is doing so. And part of this undiverse nature of our economy, it also impacts the fact that we are losing our young, educated people, as well as the middle class. Most of, for instance, at Cal Poly, most of the graduates from Cal Poly leave the area. There's very few jobs, if any, for here in the county. And in other communities where this has happened, it's very problematic because the middle begins to disappear. In San Luis Obispo, I know that the schools are, there are schools that are closing. Families are moving to North County, as an example, or South County. And there's a great impact. It's a long-lasting impact that is very difficult to reverse. So it's something that, that needs to be, that we need to look at very, very carefully. Ultimately, if we cannot provide for a more diverse economy, this is something that the quality of life throughout the entire Central Coast will suffer from. And once you lose the middle class, once you lose the young, educated people, it's very difficult to bring them back, as we all know, due to the cost of housing and the lack of jobs. I think a big part of our economy in the future will be startups, will be small companies, individuals, and this has proven itself time and again in this county, where people say that, you know, they want to live here, they don't want to move, and they will either start a business in many cases. So we provide resources for those individuals that want to start a business. And it is also very difficult to attract companies that are of any significant size. They will not likely move here any longer because of the cost of housing. So what do we have? We have smaller companies, fewer employees, and that's a trend. I want to sort of leave at that and see if there are any questions about the local economy as well as economic development or business development in the region. Any questions at all? Yes, Mike.
Hold on a minute.
Mike, can you elaborate a bit more about companies not coming here because of housing and costs? And the reason I ask is, if you look at Silicon Valley, you look at other major areas, the cost of housing is even greater there than it is here. So moving from those areas to here, wouldn't that tend to make their employees better able to afford housing?
That's a very good question. In some cases, Silicon Valley has home prices that are equal to this county. However, the big difference, of course, and this is where it makes it unaffordable, the affordability index is not just the cost of housing, but is there a job that can afford to sustain someone for that home? And the problem is that it is very difficult to recruit people because of the cost of housing and the lack of jobs. It is very difficult for people, as you're suggesting, to move from Silicon Valley to here because of the lack of jobs. Yes.
Mike's over here. Mike, what you mentioned that diversification is a key issue. What thinking or planning has the EVC done in terms of diversification strategies? Has there been much thought given to other industry sectors, other opportunities that can be attracted into the area?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Nick. Ultimately, to attract companies, those companies have to have employees that can afford the median price, as an example. So we are working on attracting, for instance, teams of companies that may be in the biotech industry. So small companies that have high-paying jobs that can afford the median price. And in some cases, these are companies that are located, for the most part, in Southern and Northern California, where the quality of life is something that isn't in some cases. And there is a very poor quality of life, and they're seeking to move to an area. And so you have to be very careful. You have to be very selective when you're looking at companies that you might attract. Ultimately, this is not a very pro-growth environment. But there's also a balance that we're faced with to have high-paying jobs. I think in some cases the quality of life issue is one which is catching up to us. And by that I mean in a positive way. As, 10, 20 years from today, this area will be seen, no doubt, in my mind at least, as being an area that has a very high quality of life. So you have more and more people from Southern and Northern California that are retiring, but you also have a fair number of companies that have moved here because of the quality of life. So that's a resource for which we have and we can take advantage of to make our economy more diverse.
Okay, here I am.
Yes.
Finally. My name is Trudy Jarrett. I'm president of the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County. I have a statement and a question. I remember my son-in-law graduated from Cal Poly in the mid-'80s. Engineering. And of course they wanted to stay here, but because there were no jobs, he had to look elsewhere. He went down to Southern California. Now, housing was affordable then, but there were still no jobs. I worked for a while up here after I retired as a licensed real estate broker. And one of the biggest problems that we saw was that there wasn't enough property zoned where manufacturing companies, for example, could go in South County. So I'm wondering, What is the situation today? Is there adequate land where we could put companies that would want to come here that could provide higher paying jobs? Do we have enough land zoned for those kinds of things?
For companies, I think that there is. In fact, I was just in Grover Beach this last week and was visiting a site for companies. So I think that there are. In North County there is, certainly in Paso Robles. So, again, is a large company with, you know, hundreds of employees going to move here? No, not likely. But is a small company that could accommodate the infrastructure we now have? I think yes, absolutely. Yes.
Chair. I wanted to add a little bit of an answer to Mike's question before. Mike, I think one of the answers for the Silicon Valley isn't an answer we really want to pursue, and that is that a lot of their workforce is living out in Stockton, Morgan Hill, Gilroy, San Juan Bautista. They're driving 100, 150 miles one way to work to get affordable housing. Not a good solution. I also want to just clarify a couple of numbers that were used in the last presentation, not that they were wrong, but the 600,000 is a slightly misleading number. That's the number that everyone gets from the Association of Realtors statewide, and it's only single-family resale through multiple listing services. Doesn't include for sale by owner, doesn't include condominium, doesn't include new housing. A more accurate overall picture you can get from DataQuick, and that number is about 520,000. And the 10% figure also comes from CAR, and what it is if you simply took the median income, and that was your only revenue source, and you used it to apply to get the median price home. So it's accurate, but it's not a reflection because the people, if you have equity in one house and you bring it to another, you're still in the market.
I got questions. I've got time for two more questions. We've got John, and then we've got Mr. Ravenow to go.
Thank you. I actually don't have a question. I have a couple of comments. John Scholes, I'm currently the mayor of Grover Beach, and I see quite a few of my colleagues here. I see Tony Farrell, Mayor Aurora Grandy, Marianne Reese, Mayor of Pismo Beach, and various other council members. And I've said at the past Vision 2050 in San Luis Obispo is that to answer a lot of these questions, it takes political will. And it gets to the heart of the question regarding land use and how do you connect land use to economy. It's definitely one of the things you commonly get is a request to change for a general plan amendment to go from industrial to residential land because that's what the builders believe everyone wants. And so if we continue to not have an appropriate supply of land for jobs, we will continue to exacerbate the situation. Now, the gentleman over here talked about what is the EVC doing to address the issue of diversifying the economy. I wanted to kind of chime in here. I believe the EVC is trying to put together a long-term economic plan for San Luis Obispo County. We have a task force that is charged with trying to get that effort underway. Many of you have probably heard of UCSB economic forecast. I think that's coming soon in which, you know, Dr. Watkins and the other smart folks come in and tell us how we're doing, what have been the trends and what are the forecasts. But it doesn't lay out a strategy for countywide as to what type of jobs we want to try and attract and what are the strategies to do that. So the EVC is trying to take a lead role in diversifying the economy for San Luis Obispo County. So I just wanted to throw that in there. Mike, you're doing a great job.
If I could make a comment also, for those that have attended the UCSB economic forecast meetings, and probably most of you have, the information in those meetings is very helpful for economic planning. And just further to what John Scholes just mentioned, that the book that is provided at the end of those meetings is always accurate, and Bill is always, in some cases, never wrong. But again, it goes back to more case-specific information or trends about where we are going as a county. And I think by drilling down on that data and getting more case-specific data as to where we are and where we're going will be much more helpful than just a book of data so that we can figure out, you know, how do we attract those companies that will provide high-paying jobs. They won't just come here by themselves, and they won't just get created. we have to provide the kinds of resources that companies can say, you know, thank you, we can connect the dots now with both county, the city, and the EDC works with community development directors in all the cities. So we have a very collaborative effort that works to help stimulate this economy locally.
You know, there's one aspect of it, too, that I think we're really missing the boat on. I'm a retired school principal. I come out of vocational education. Mike and I have had many conversations on this. And we're talking about bringing a workforce into our community. What about the workforce that we have existing within our community that isn't trained in a vocation? Take a look at our high school dropout rates. Take a look at some of the needs of our local unions. You know, there are programs that can put together. I know. I ran them for 20 years that will actually teach a trade to these people. These young people and middle-aged people are already living in our county. They're already here. Why would we want to exacerbate an existing problem by trying to import additional people into our community? Makes no sense to me at all. Let's train the ones that we have. Thank you.
With that, I think we're on schedule. Are we looking at a break next, maybe, Chuck? Is that right?
Don't we have some economic vitality questions?
We do. Oh, you do have questions. That's right. We have polling questions.
Yep.
Sorry. Didn't mean to go to the break too soon.
We'll get to the break real quick.
Promises.
We have about six questions for you to get your opinion on economic vitality in this community. And the first one is, San Luis Obispo County has a diverse economy that is sustainable over the long term. Do you agree or disagree with that statement? Yes. Good. Thank you for reminding me. So everyone, if you could, go ahead and input your answer. If you strongly agree, you'd press 1. If you agree, 2. If you disagree, press 3. And if you strongly disagree with that statement, press 4. And since we are registering some new folks, if you could go ahead and press the button one more time. Yep, everyone. Okay, great. Next question. We are headed for an economy in which the working poor will primarily serve the wealthy. Do you agree or disagree with that statement? Slow County's economy needs to grow more private sector opportunities that provide higher salaries and better benefits. We should be more concerned about the national economy and its impact on San Luis Obispo County. I am willing to accept a moderate impact, and I'll stop the clock on this one. I'm willing to accept a moderate impact to the quality of life for a project or business proposal that significantly improves the local economy of the county. This is your basic NIMBY question. I would not support any business proposal or project if it does not adequately mitigate environmental impacts, regardless of the economic benefits. Okay. San Luis Obispo has a diverse economy, sustainable over the long term. 5% of you strongly agree. 34% agree, so that's about 40%. 60% disagree. So why might you one say we don't have a economy that's sustainable? Why might someone say that? Pardon? We're losing the workforce. We need the microphone so that because this is being televised.
Young people are leaving the area. We're seeing student enrollments decline. We're seeing college graduates leave the area. So what does that hold for the future?
So that impacts sustainability, yes.
We don't have diverse enough. We don't have diversity in our jobs here. And if one type of business is impacted severely, it has a great effect across the whole spectrum.
Lack of diversity in jobs. Why might 40% of the people say we do have a sustainable economy? Yes. David?
You're all going to get tired of hearing from me. But, you know, I voted on agree on this one here. And the primary is I'm not strongly agreeing with it, but I'm saying that the concerns that we have today can be met and fulfilled that will allow us to go forward. But it's these kind of forums, and it's the will of the elected official is what's going to make it happen.
So we can address the issues that we have to address. Any other comments? Next question. We're headed for an economy in which the working poor primarily serve the wealthy. 85% of you agree with that statement. Any observations or comments with regard to that situation? What does that imply?
It implies that we really need to do something about the middle class.
Okay. Any other observations? Yes.
I think it implies something that's not true. It implies that we're a highly polarized community and that most people are either poor or wealthy. And I think it ignores the reality that far more people are in the middle class, and people of limited means work alongside of people of limited or middle class. And you don't have this hue bipolar distribution that this question would give you the implication of.
Any other thoughts on this question? Next one was, Slow County's economy needs to grow more private sector opportunities. 90% said yes. Is that kind of an obvious answer or question? We had one person who said they strongly disagreed. Why might someone disagree? Maybe you just pushed the wrong button. We should be more concerned about the national economy and its impact on San Luis Obispo County. We've got about 60% that agree and 40% disagree. So why might someone say we need to be concerned about the national economy? What would be the reason? Yes.
Well, it seems to me what we ought to focus on maybe is the global economy. Isn't that the one that's really impacting us?
So we should have put global economy up there also.
I recommend it.
Okay. Good observation. Yes.
No. I put a strongly disagree down there. And the primary reason is that we have a microcosm within our Central Coast area that allows us to be who we want to be. We don't know what that is yet, obviously, but it allows us that opportunity. National impact, the only thing that impacts us is really the state government in takeaways, and that is trying to be corrected. But the national economy is very inconsequential to what we need to do as, they're not going to help us do it.
So you're saying we're somewhat insulated from the implications of the national economy.
Okay. Yeah, to add to that point, if we are truly to think in terms of sustainability, our future, then it seems to me we need to be more conscious of how much more self-sufficient we can be, more autonomous. There's an interdependency that we're dealing with here. So if the mindset is on a dependency on external sources of support, be it state, national, global, then I think we're doomed. But if we think more in terms of what we can do ourselves to become more self-sufficient and autonomous, then I think we're really thinking about smart growth.
Okay. Next question. I am willing to accept moderate impacts to quality of life for a project or business proposal that significantly improves the local economy in the county. That 70% agree with that statement and 30% disagree. Any observations? You know, we have a lot of proposals and a lot of ideas that really look good in the planning stages, and when we get down to implementation, that's when the people come out and fight it.
I'm one of the people who disagreed, and I'll tell you why. You will never hear a man or woman drive by a piece of land and point out at it and say, son, that was once a strip mall, but now we're farming on it. Quality of life is a one-way strip, and every time you degrade it, it's irreversible. And for that reason, I think we have to defend the quality of life here, as well as have good projects and good jobs.
Okay.
I would have to concur with Mike on that. I think the issue here begs the definition of what is moderate. And cumulatively, how many moderate impacts does it take to make a major impact?
Okay. Any other observations? That's why someone might disagree with that statement. Why might someone agree with it?
I guess I'm looking at this question, and although I did put down disagree for many of the already stated observations, I'm not sure you can divide the two. It's not an either or. One is interdependent on the other. And so it is a matter of degree. You can't maintain your quality of life here if you have a crummy economy. You can't build parks and dedicate land to parks if you are only concerned with getting tax dollars in, because obviously that's not revenue generating, and that contributes to the quality of life. So they're so interdependent, I'm not sure you can make an either-or statement. But I think that, again, it gets down to the balance between the two.
Okay. We had one more question, and that is, I would not support a business or proposal or project if it does not adequately mitigate environmental impacts, regardless of the economic benefits. Here we had 75% of you agree with that statement, and 25% disagree. Any comments or observations regarding this question before we go to our break? Sounds like there's a...
I think each of us has had some impact on the environment as we moved to the area, and in the eyes of the people who were already here, we may not have mitigated our arrival. So I think if we take this personally, both the previous question and the current question kind of speak to balancing economic impacts and environmental impacts. I don't think you can separate the two.
It's basically a balancing act and a judgment call. Any other observations or comments with regard to economic vitality? Okay, we have some food back here. We are running a couple of minutes late, so I would ask you to be back. If you could, take about 5 minutes. Let's take 10 minutes and be back at 20 after, according to that clock. So let's be back here at 20 after.